5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to Stone Cold Strohs. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. And in between episodes of our show here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports on our flagship site, sportsmap.com. On today's episode, the Astros pull out an upset series. Is it a sign of things to come? We'll give our thoughts. Some big questions around the pitching staff right now with Fromber's control and guys returning. How long can they carry the load for this team? We'll give our thoughts on that as well. And the Josh Hader haters are eating crow right now and washing it down with Haterade. I don't know if that works or not, but all that and more to come. Gents, the Astros win streak, the first win streak of the season, was cut short to the shortest a win streak can be, just two. Charlie, do you see the consistency from this team through the first 21 games as a sign of who this team is? Or do you trust that guys like Yordan and Walker and Yiner will eventually find their way offensively and raise this team's ability to win at a clip that's moderate to significantly above 500?
We're still a little early for the benchmark where typically in baseball circles, well, give everyone at least 100 plate appearances. By the end of this week, all of the Astros' everyday players will have crossed that 100 plate appearance threshold. They better not stay consistent like this or the team's going nowhere, right? The pitching on balance has been excellent. The offense has been pitiful. Wait, are we talking about the Rockets or the Astros? I'm going to start with Yordan Alvarez. Wake up, Yordan! Again, we're still not to that 100 plate appearances, but we're knocking on it, and Yordan is just showing no sustained signs. I mean, the Padres series, Friday night, he didn't get the ball out of the infield. Saturday, he did launch a ringing ground rule double that hopped the fence in right center. And then Sunday, an ofer with a couple of lazy fly balls. So going into the Toronto series, Yordan batting 206 with a mid-sixes OPS. That's terrible for anyone. But for Yordan Alvarez, one of the great sluggers of the game for multiple seasons, okay, if you have 3 weeks, you suck in June, it's a slump. But the clock is ticking. And when you're batting third every night and you're not doing your job, it just renders it from highly unlikely to near impossible to have an offense that you're saying that's really good. And while calling out one of the Astros' two foremost ranking stars offensively, your turn, Jose Altuve, who starting the week, hey, batting 302, but a lot of empty calories in Jose Altuve's 302 batting average. He still has just one double this season. Hit three early home runs. Well, the last 11 games, Jose Altuve has one extra base hit, that double. Over those same 11 games, he's walked once. Altuve's walked four times for the season. That stinks for a leadoff hitter. So while Altuve has an obviously very good 302 batting average, his on-base percentage is 330. Isak Paredes is batting in the 230s. His on-base percentage is higher than Altuve's. And Jose Altuve, we know, and through his great years, a pretty free swinger, but he's gone too far in the other direction given the results of when he puts the bat on the ball. And you can take the Sunday night game against the Padres as a crystallization of that. His first at bat, a 3-2 count, he chases a pitch a foot out of the strike zone. And he hit it pretty well, but it was a flyout in the end to right center field. 2-2 count in the sixth inning. Strikes out on a pitch in his eyes. Right, Jose Altuve is chasing at an awful rate so far this season. 94% of major league players thus far, and yes, sample size, but it grows by the day, 94% of big league hitters swing at a lower percentage of pitches outside the strike zone than Jose Altuve. And if you're going to be mostly punch and Judy, barely batting 300, which in batting average, yes, that's very good, but batting average is overrated as a standalone statistic. You're on bases 330 and you're not delivering extra hit wallop. Swing less, work more counts. You have to walk more. Altuve has never been confused with Ricky Henderson drawing walks. Nevertheless, he had improved. Well, last season, his walk rate dropped by 35%, while his strikeout rate for the second year in a row was the worst of his career. Well, so far this season, Altuve's working on a hat trick. This would be a third consecutive season, striking out at a worse rate than he ever has before in his career. And that walk rate that plunged 35% last season, thus far this season, it's down another 36%. So Altuve and Alvarez, the A's, between them, they're grading maybe C minus so far.
I mean, to pile on what Charlie's saying, we saw Altuve strike out 5 times in one game this year. I mean, that should tell you everything you want to know. And we know that he's a good hitter at hitting bad pitches, balls out of the zone. But you talked about all the weak contact. You're not going to help your contact getting harder by swinging at pitches out of the zone because you're barely getting to those. There was a slider he chased. I can't remember which game it was in the Padres series. It was in like the left-hander's batter's box, and he was swinging at that. And then Charlie mentioned the one over his head, and he's just got to lock in a little bit more because he's chasing everything. And we talked about the advanced analytics. I said he was getting a little bit lucky last week, and we're starting to see that continue. And Charlie's right. Throughout his career, he hasn't been a guy that's a super high velo hitter, but it is alarming that he was at such the bottom percentile in baseball. Yordan's the only one that's given me hope that Christian Walker and Yiner might get something going here, because if Yordan can be this bad for this long, then it makes me want to give Christian Walker and Yiner a little bit of a pass, just because if Yordan's this good and struggling, then it can happen to anybody. But how bad have they been? Yiner right now has the second worst OPS in all of baseball. Christian Walker's 15th worst. These were two guys that you were counting on to provide something in the middle of your lineup, and it is just not happening so far. So that's a big concern, because the pitching has been so good and the hitting has been so bad. Consistently, they are consistent in that manner, Brandon. They consistently can't hit, and they consistently can pitch. And the bullpen's been really good. The starting pitching has been much better. Who thought, you know, Gusto and all these other guys would be coming through? And, you know, Blanco hasn't been great, but he's been better in his last few games. Wesneski has been really good. So you're wasting a lot of this quality pitching, and it's a problem that you're not going to get away from Yiner. You're not going to get away from Christian Walker. You're not going to get away from Altuve and Yordan. These they just have to hit better. That's the bottom line.
Joe Espada wrote Jeremy Pena into the cleanup spot the last two games of the Padres series. I mean, come on. You can't have a louder indictment of Christian Walker specifically, and then secondarily Yiner Diaz on that. On Walker, we talked about this in one of the episodes last week, that it seems like every other time he's in the batter's box, the count is 0-2.
Yeah.
Well, went data digging on this, and it's not every other at-bat, but it's every third plate appearance that Christian Walker is in that deep hole. 87 plate appearances through the San Diego series, 28 of those 87. Christian Walker's had an 0-2 count. Now, no hitters go on to do well overall after being down 0-2 in the count. But Christian Walker, in those 24 at-bats, where he's drawn some walks, so 28 plate appearances, he's 1-for-24. That's a 42 batting average after falling down 0-2 in the count. Now, some context on that, right? It seems an alarmingly, appallingly bad percentage of his at-bats that he's fallen behind 0-2 in the count, because it's the truth. Yordan Alvarez, 84 plate appearances, 16 times he's been down 0-2 in the count. Yordan's 0-for-14 in those at-bats. Yiner Diaz, 66 plate appearances, 14 times he's been behind 0-2 in the count. He's 0 for 14 in those at-bats. But Walker, the frequency with which he's down 0-2, when you pretty much have no chance as a hitter, if that number, that percentage is not going to drop, then Christian Walker is going to be Jose Abreu 2.0. But this was a guy who was a very good player the last 3 years, so you hope there's at least just some positive regression to the mean. But we note, over those 3 years, he was a 250 hitter. So that, hey, how come Christian Walker's not hitting 280 with power? Because he's not a 280 hitter. Never has been. And for those who always want to grab the pitchforks and go after the hitting coaches, you know, I talked about Altuve's chase rate. Yainer Diaz is just very immature in the batter's box. I mentioned Altuve, 94% of batters swing at a lower percentage of pitches outside the strike zone. 98% of other batters swing at pitches outside the strike zone less frequently than Yainer Diaz. And oh, by the way, Yainer Diaz last season, he was also in the second percentile of chase. As a rookie, he was in the first percentile of chase. In the end, I go back to, it's on the player. You want to be a major leaguer? Perform. But that the hitters have been able to do zero with Yainer Diaz in terms of strike zone judgment and plate discipline. Jeremy Pena has made some progress already, having drawn 7 walks this season. Well, I'm crediting Jeremy Pena for that. Not Cintron and Snitker. The offense, you know, Easter, they gave out the Altuve socks. For Easter, they should have gave out rotten eggs because that's the Astros' offense so far this season. It can't stay this bad, right? It can't stay this bad. .222 batting average, .630 OPS. The Royals, whose offense other than Bobby Witt Jr., an absolute wreck so far this season. And the first place Texas Rangers, the only teams in the American League scoring fewer runs per game than the Astros so far. In just 6 of 21 games, have they mustered even 4 runs.
And just quickly, why does Cam Smith look like he's taking more mature and polished and big league type approaches and at-bats at the place? This guy has hardly no experience. He's learning a new position, and he's spitting on changeups and breaking pitches out of the zone and working at-bats and working walks. Like, come on, guys, he's a rookie.
Can I take a stab at that?
Yeah,
can I take a stab at answering that? Because yeah. I don't think he's been around this Astros team long enough to have some of those bad habits rub off. Look, before the season, we heard Dana Brown talk about how they wanted this team to improve their at-bats, have more patient, productive at-bats, work longer counts, make pitchers work harder. We haven't seen that reflected at the plate by really anyone other than Paredes, who came in here doing that already. We've seen a little bit of uptick in that from Pena. We've seen a little bit of uptick in that in McCormick. But other than that, we're not really seeing that at the plate. Historic slow starts. This team just starts slow. That's just what they're known for. Ironically, Bregman and Tucker leave and have no issues getting out of the gate once they're on new teams. So my question is this, at what point does Houston have to consider that the call is coming from inside the house? And that is to say that this seems to be a cultural issue, and it's now impacting one of their best young bats, one of the best young bats in the league, in Yordan Alvarez.
In fairness, Tucker was fantastic early last season. The Astros weren't, but he was. It's like whatever infection gets to their plate discipline, it's a different page from the same book of the Astros assessing arm injuries of the pitchers. Make it stop.
Brandon, I am kind of with you. It feels like these hitting coaches, they're like sacred cows, where anytime anybody tries to offer any kind of critique, people are like, that's ridiculous, and it's all on the hitters. And for the most part, it is. But when the trend is so alarming, I think it's at least worth talking about, looking into. I mean, they're hitting coaches. That these guys do get replaced. You see the Yankees all the time over certain seasons where they're not hitting well and they fire the hitting coach. It's something you can kind of do to shake things up. It's like firing an offensive coordinator or something like that, just to kind of get everybody's attention. I'm not saying they should do that, but I think it's crazy that we can't at least have that discussion.
The Astros state of affairs, the last at bat of the Padres series, that Joe Espada made the right move, sending up a pinch hitter batting 145. Right? Yainer Diaz, the hope for a lucky home run, hitting him for Dubon when you're down one. Of course, Yainer gets absolutely blown away, strikeout, game over. But as you open with, Brandon, taking 2 out of 3 from the Padres was good work. Right? Missed out on the sweep, so you're supposed to be greedy when you win the first two. But heading into that series, the Astros were offered 2 out of 3 over a Padres team that came in 15-4. You'd have jumped all over it.
And you only lose by one in the series finale. You hold them to three runs. Although with this offense, three runs and a one-run deficit seems like an insurmountable mountain. But it's a good showing and a really good showing by the pitching staff. I was hoping we could get into your thoughts on Cam playing right field and how well he's taken to that. But I think we're going to just have to move on because of time here. Just a quick message that if you're interested on advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends over at the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is in the description. We have to move on to pitching. But Josh, you brought this up, you know, how well pitching staff is doing right now. Framber Valdez goes six innings, gives up seven hits in that finale, just two earned runs, three walks, but only two strikeouts. It's being reported, and Framber was asked about it, the lack of control in that sinker as his ground ball rate has dropped this season. Framber says he's going to work on it and that he trusts that it'll eventually get ironed out there. For a team that has struggled to scratch across runs, how much pressure is on this pitching staff to carry this team? And do you think that disparity between the offense and the pitching is sustainable?
Well, it's sustainable if you want to be a mediocre team. But kind of like a football team where, hey, the offense can't score. The defense is doing its job and eventually gets fed up with needing to hold an opponent to 3 points to be in the game in the fourth quarter. I don't know, individually, do the Astros starters go to the mound thinking, well, if I give up more than one run, I'm not going to get the win tonight. I mean, Hunter Brown just goes out every start and pitches brilliantly. Framber hasn't hit start in, start out rhythm yet, but I think the bulk of body of work suggests that he'll be all right. You mentioned command of the sinker's not there. Whether it was early last year or 2 years ago, where there was the wonder, is he throwing it too hard that he was falling in love with the radar gun and the law of gravity? You know, you're throwing it harder, you're giving it less time to sink a little bit. But if location is off, but the arm seems sound, right? The velocity seems fine. So Framber can frustrate, but as we discussed last week, a body of work year in, year out for about a half decade now, he's been solid. Hey, if he goes to pieces, damaging A, this Astro season, B, any trade value to have, if you want to explore that, that would be just crushing. But Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez, I expect to still be the overall solid rocks of this rotation. Gusto was kind of fortunate, scattering nine hits in five innings Friday to just give up two runs, but results-driven business. And Wesneski, right, he's gone at least five innings each time out. If he gives you five innings, two runs, six innings, three runs, you live with that, especially talking about sustainability. The Astros bullpen, best ERA in the American League to this point.
Yeah, I mean, the pitching was good last year, too. And this team just kind of eked into the playoffs, winning the division by a few games. But they were at least a top 10 hitting team last year to go along with being a really good pitching team. This year, it's so far apart. Pitching, Astros 10th in ERA right now, 7th in WHIP, 8th in batting average against. And then you look at their offense, 26th in OPS, 27th in slugging, still dead last in doubles. We bring that up. It seems like every time we do a podcast, they're not getting a lot of extra base hits. So to me, no, this is not sustainable. Just for them to be as good as last year, you have to see a significant uptick in the offense. And right now, I don't see where that's coming from. And how much longer can you count on Jake Meyers to be hitting at this level before he eventually drops off a little bit? You're wasting some of these opportunities. And they made some changes at second base for this season, moving Altuve. It's not working. You are getting nothing out of second base from an offensive standpoint.
That's, again, if Jacob Melton would show signs at AAA where he's 4-for-21 and he's not an elite prospect and he's already older than 24 and a half, but a left-handed bat option because, I mean, the numbers are there on Brendan Rodgers. He sucked outside Coors Field as a hitter. Dubon's a bad offensive player. Altuve may be a bad defensive second baseman, but you know what? If you had a legit offensive third outfielder, you put that guy in there and Altuve plays more second base than the occasional fly ball pitcher start. But they don't have that third guy, right? It's not McCormick. It's not DeCenzo. It's Yordan occasionally. So if Jacob Melton can dramatically pick it up, hey, maybe this is the year Pedro Leon develops.
Let's stay on pitching. We finally get the return from injury for Whitley. Ort's also on the way back. Lance McCullers, who was scratched from his last rehab start due to a stomach bug, is also on his way back. The rehab clock is ticking on him, so he'll be back sooner than later. What do you guys think the ripple effect is going to be on this pitching staff with all these guys returning?
Yeah, with McCullers, the stomach doesn't connect to the elbow, right? or the forearm.
That we know of.
I guess as Ort joins Whitley in the bullpen, if he bothers checking rosters, Dusty Baker will cuss a little bit less of a blue streak. Four left-handers! I couldn't get one when I was managing the team! Bennett Sousa seems the logical candidate to be the first guy out. And as we said, there'll be some churn, which they've done with the Luis Contreras's and Nick Hernandez types. You pitch twice in 3 days or three times in 5 days, yeah, you'll go down until there's another injury or we call up a fresher arm. And of course, McCullers, you're not going to move any of the five starters, so that's another relief pitcher. You'd have to be a move off the roster. You would think Okert is safe. Obviously, King is safe. So there's Sousa. I imagine Logan Van Wy is another guy who's going to be on that Sugarland shuttle during the course of the season.
I wonder what they'll do with Gusto. When McCullers is ready, you're paying him almost $18 million a year. How does he not come in and join your starting rotation? Jim Crane would throw a fit. So you got to see what that looks like, and you're not going to roll with six starters, I wouldn't think. So Gusto's got to go, I guess, to the bullpen. It also made me start thinking that you have so much pitching. You have Arrighetti that you expect him back pretty soon, and you're so weak at second base in the outfield. Is there any, I don't have a name, but is there any trade you can make with so much pitching? Could you find a left-handed bat, somebody that can maybe play some second base or some outfield just to give you some options, that somebody that can hit left-handed in this lineup to give this offense a spark? I know that you're not trading McCullers, obviously. Nobody's going to want to take that risk. He has a no-trade clause. You know, who's going to give you that much for Gusto? I don't know. You probably don't want to get rid of Arrighetti. He could have an incredible career. But I'm just wondering, you do have so much pitching. Is there anything out there Dana Brown could find you a left-handed bat, like I said, that could maybe play some second base or play some outfield?
Alex Verdugo had four hits Saturday. Dope! McCullers won't be more than a 3 or 4 inning starter, I think, for a good while once he joins. So maybe he and Gusto split the fifth spot until Arrighetti gets back, minimizing your use of your middle relievers that day. If McCullers starts and gets you through 3 2/3, Gusto comes on and he gets you through the sixth.
And let's stay on pitching. Credit where it's due. We're going to give criticism of Josh Hader, and we criticized him for the entirety of his debut season with Houston because he was underwhelming in relation to his price tag. This year, different story. And so far, not to be jinxy, but he's only allowed one run. The whip is at 0.64 right now. So kudos to Josh for, is it the reverse Samson? He cut his hair and now he's better. Not sure, but this is definitely more of who we thought we would see from Josh Hader. How was your confidence level changed in him this year? And what kind of effect do you think that has on the team when they know they can hand a lead to him? And it's so far been pretty safe.
Well, it's the oddity of odd year Hader. 2021, his earned run average was 1.23. 2023, it was 1.28. He starts this week at sub one. Will he maintain that all season? No, but that he's in the mid ones is plausible. And Hader was not very good last season. You know, that's why he lost 8 games, especially the first half of the year, giving up those ninth inning home runs and tie games seemingly every week for a while. But the Astros only lost 2 games last season. They led after 8 innings. As we've discussed here from time to time, every bullpen is going to close out a game. It has the lead after 8 innings most of the time. Josh Hader does have 2 one-run saves already this season, right? The tough saves where you have no margin of error. So, sure, the comfort factor is there. The challenge is having a lead after 8 innings, a higher percentage of time than the Astros have had so far this season, right? Brian Abreu's been a little spotty. The command's been off. But you still, kind of like Fromber, you expect him to settle in and be the horse that he's been in the bullpen for the last couple of years. I mean, Brian King's not going to be perfect every time out, so that you get up a home run to a lefty Saturday to Sheets in San Diego. Stuff's going to happen. But 7, 8, 9, the Astros look just fine in the pen.
Locator's been fantastic this year. No way around it. I've been very critical of him, but for good reason last year. I mean, how many middle fastballs did he pump in a row over and over and over again? What's the difference this year? He's throwing a slider more, and the slider's a more effective pitch. He can actually throw it for strikes. But there's a reason that people kind of feel that way they do about Hader, and it's not just the money. It's the final game of the season when you got eliminated by the Tigers, and Presley and Hader were absolutely terrible in that game. But they give up 4 runs in the 8th inning and basically knocked you out of the playoffs. That's the last thing that you saw Hader do as an Astros fan last year, was basically blow the season. I know they only had a 1-run lead and Presley put him in that jam, but Hader was also really terrible when he got into that game. What blew him up? A middle fastball. So I think this year they're mixing it up, and he only really throws 2 pitches. He's thrown a few changeups, but he's mostly just a fastball slider guy. If you're going to be a 2-pitch pitcher, you have to be able to throw your off-speed pitch for strikes, and you have to be able to throw it to get guys to chase it out of the zone, or they're just going to sit on a fastball. And Hader doesn't throw 100 miles an hour. At least he doesn't anymore. It's right around 95. So this day in the big leagues, that's not a big deal. He's got to be able to mix his pitches. He has. If you look at his advanced analytics, he's been incredible this year. He's been almost unhittable. Just keep it up, man, and we'll keep rooting for you. But it wasn't a good first impression last year. So now he's got to go out and prove that he can be that elite closer, and he's doing a great job so far.
The home run ball torched Josh Hader last year. He gave up 12 in 71 innings, which is just unacceptable from a closer. Well, he hadn't given up one so far this season. He's also walked only 2 batters in 11 innings. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going to have to hope that he continues to compete on that pace, because this offense does not appear better than last year's. And last year's offense could only muster 3 runs across those 2 wildcard games with the Tigers. So while the bullpen certainly did not help, the offense didn't put them in a position to win either. That's going to be it for this episode. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating, please. Our next scheduled episode drops on Thursday. Make sure you subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston, and our other channel, Sports Map Texas. We just dropped a new episode over there previewing the draft, so make sure you go check that out. We're going to be ramping up that channel when we get closer to the regular season. We also drop emergency episodes as news breaks, so make sure you got those notifications on. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon, saying so long. Until next time, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses, or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.